How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Hey, everybody, this is Matthew Soltysiak, and you're listening to Not the Same Old Lions podcast, part of the Minute Media Podcast Network. This season, it's all grit. I speak with a variety of guests and interview key players, gaining more insight on what makes this team go. The Detroit Lions are now in a new, grittier era, and we look beyond just the kneecaps when it comes to the analysis. Welcome to another episode. Week 2 of training camp is wrapping up. We'll discuss the major events this week, including Taylor Decker's contract extension, the injury to John Kaminsky, more with the Detroit Lions kicking saga, plus the wide receiver depth, and hear from a couple of special guests from the Talking Grit podcast who were at Thursday's practice to give us a firsthand account of what took place. That and more. Let's get to it, Lions fans.
This is James Williams, and you're listening to Not the Same Old Lions podcast.
I'm joined today by Coach Jerry Angers, named Michigan High School Coach of the Year, as well as Coach of the Week by the Detroit Lions. He's also mentored numerous players to the college level and some all the way to the NFL. Coach, it's great to have you here.
Oh, another great day in Northern Michigan talking Lions football. Nothing better.
All right, we have a lot on the plate today. Let's start by some things that happened earlier in the week. Let's start with the good news. Taylor Decker getting his contract extension, Coach. Talk to me how you're feeling about that.
Oh, I love it. Again, you know, I think the most thing I the best thing I love about it is that he talked to Dan Campbell and said that, you know, asked him about his contract. Campbell has an open door policy. Campbell does not want to be a head coach like he had before, because he had said he had been lied to in numerous occasions, or not numerous, at least once. And for them to, you know, keep the band together, basically. That's what they're doing. They're keeping the band together. They're keeping the you know, the blood, the Honolulu blue blood, with Decker and Sewell and St. Brown, and you know, back in the days with the Lions when they got rid of Lomas and Spielman and Spindler and those things. That's when the team fell apart, and the Lions are keeping the guys in. And what a better way than to hopefully begin and end your career in Honolulu Blue. Well-respected tackle, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm thrilled for this. You know, during his remarks, Taylor Decker talked about how he's been here for the lows, and now that they're in the highs, he's glad that he can be a part of that and that the Lions appreciate that. Because before the last two seasons, he finished in last place with the club for 4 years in a row. And now that they're doing well, he appreciates that they still consider him to be a part of that vital future. And, Coach, we had Lomas Brown on the show last year, and he talked about Taylor Decker and said that word consistent really just described Decker well. And that's one of the things we so appreciate about him. A great guy, a hard worker, and glad to know that he's going to be here for even longer than his current contract was. So that's awesome news there.
For sure.
Now, let's move over to the unfortunate news. This is the news we never want to hear on a training camp at all, and that's injury stuff. And this one hits close to your heart, Coach, because I know this is one of your favorite players. John Kaminsky tore his MCL. He is out for the foreseeable future, likely the entire season. There's discussion about maybe what could happen at the end of the season. Coach, put into words, how are you feeling about this, and what does this do for the Lions?
Oh, I mean, that, you know it too. I mean, we talk about him all the time. He's one of the guys I love watching the most. Everybody else gets the press, but he just brings the lunchbox in and puts the hard helmet on and plays football. So he's going to be duly missed. And I think the biggest thing, it's not even whether he's not making splash plays or doing plays. He's that consistent, does exactly what they need him to do, moves around on the defensive line. And I think he's one of those well-liked players that everybody loves in the huddle. And I think that's, you know, it's going to hurt him a little bit, but I think it may also make the defensive line rise a little bit, especially the guys that have been playing with Kaminsky that are going to each and every game, they're going to play that much harder and say to themselves, you know, we can't make mistakes. Look what happened to the commish. And I think it's, you know, it's going to hurt. It's, you know, my watching the Lions games, I'm going to have to find another favorite player under the radar player that I just love to watch because, you know, from what he's done with that. So, but you know, and again, it's part of the game. And, you know, every day I wake up and I pray and say, God, I hope no injuries today from any team in the NFL, not just the Lions.
Yeah. I hear you on that one. That's the last thing any fan wants because we want what's best for these guys. And we also know that makes the game even that much more fun to watch when they're all healthy and competing at their highest levels. The Lions have a lot of depth pieces. So it'll be interesting to see who, can come out and who can, you know, elevate their game over these next few weeks to try and help fill the void that has now been put there. Coach, I did have the opportunity to speak with members of the Talkin' Grit podcast at another Detroit Lions podcast. They were at practice on Thursday. They gave us their accounts of what they saw. And well, here's that conversation. Joining me now are Jason Harwood and Jacob Litton from the Detroit Lions podcast, Talkin' Grit. Now, Jason and Jacob were out at practice on Thursday, and they're here to share some of what they've been seeing. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, good to be here.
All right, now, before we get started, I want you guys to tell the listeners a little bit more about your show. Let's start with, how'd you guys get started with Talkin' Grit?
So, basically, we work together. We talk Lions, we talk football pretty much all day long, to the point where it's annoying most of the people that we work with. And, you know, Jason, being a listener of podcasts, just came up with the idea, you know what, we should create a podcast and just talk about it, you know, give us a platform. That way, maybe we're talking about it less at work, which is funny. I don't think it worked that way. If anything, it's the opposite effect. Now that's all we talk about.
We talk less about the football at work, but people ask us more about the podcast at work. Everyone seems to be super interested in the podcast. I mean, Matt, do you find that way? Do people ask you about that know that you do a podcast?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there's definitely more interest because then people are more aware that you follow the team and that you're knowledgeable about them as well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So tell me about the podcast name, Talkin' Grit. How'd you guys come up with that?
I'll jump in on that one. I have to, you know, Matt, you're married. You know, Jacob's married. We always have to give credit to our wives, and I'm going to give credit to my wife on this one. She said the word talking has to be in the name. And when she said that, it just jumped in my head, Talkin' Grit. And I was like, this team is about grit. We all enjoy that. I think the city is about grit, you know, Detroit itself. And it just sounded natural and we've run with it, actually. It's been great.
All right. Awesome. Well, before we get to what you saw out there and break it down, where can people find your show that want to check it out?
Yeah. So you can find us on Twitter, Talkin' Grit Pod. We have a Facebook page. We're on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, anywhere that you can listen to your podcast. We're pretty much on every platform right now. We love hearing from everybody. Any, you know, fan mail, any comments, anything you want to talk about, just anything at all. Very receptive to, you know, all the comments and everything we get. Definitely reach out to us on pretty much any platform you can find. And we will, you know, try to give you a shout out on the show and try to respond the best that we can.
And they will shout you out on the show. I've listened to some of their shows, and they definitely are people of their word on that one. So, good. Well, guys, let's get into the breakdown. Let's start with the kickoffs. I'm going to briefly go over the rules because, well, we know it's going to be a lot different this year, right? The return team's blockers line up between, like, the 30 and 35-yard line, and they can have one or two returners. The kicking team lines up over on the opponent's 40-yard line. The kicker's back at the 35. And the goal is the ball must land beyond the 20-yard line of the return team. Now, there's a lot of if-this-happens rules beyond that, but that's the basics of it. And we first saw it in the NFL Hall of Fame game on Thursday night. So if you want to see what it looks like with NFL players, go check that out. We saw it on the kickoff. And then after the opening drive touchdown, we got to see it again with Chicago returning it. It's brand new in the NFL. I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of special teams coordinators, you know, showing their strategy in the preseason, but they're going to be developing their strategy based on what we see in the preseason. Now, on Thursday, I understand, the Lions actually practiced this a little bit. Tell us what you guys saw out there.
First of all, it's really different to see it lined up. I mean, as a watcher of football my whole life, it seems like it was just strange to see, you know, the kicker just by themselves at the 35 and everyone just lined up on the other side of the field. So that just in itself, it just looks different. And in my lifetime, I haven't seen this big of a change in the NFL on one single play. Maybe since they introduced like the 2-point conversion or something like that, because that wasn't always a play in the NFL. So that just watching that in itself was weird, I'll say, but it was also just intriguing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it really was odd. You know, the kicker kicks the ball, nobody moves. The returners, the only people that move, nobody else can move until the ball comes down. And, you know, they had refs at practice also. And a lot of times the kicking team was moving before the ball even got there. It definitely was apparent that, you know, they definitely need to practice it more. They handled it more like a walkthrough. You know, they tried all kinds of different people back there returning the kicks, which was very interesting too. They had Amon-Ra, J-Mo, Gibbs, Montgomery, Khalif Raymond, Alexander, pretty much almost every running back or receiver got a turn back there trying to return kicks. They shuffled which blockers they were using. Just very strange. They handled it like a walkthrough.
Well, it makes sense that they would probably handle it like that because there's no experience with this, right? The kids didn't do this in high school and then in college. And so then you kind of already understood the basics of it. So it's a brand new thing. It's nice that, you know, you guys got to see them with pads on, because when I was there the week before, there were no pads. So you had that extra physicality. But I'm glad that, you know, you got to see them with the visit from the refs as well, because those are the ones that are helping them to understand the rules of the game, because it's going to be a work in progress. Now, you guys saw a lot of different people doing the returning. Did anyone have more success, or was there any success? Because what I've seen from previous leagues that have done this is that most people don't return the kick that far. Only one has ever been returned for a touchdown.
I would say the one that stuck out to me was Jahmyr Gibbs. Every time he had the ball, it's electric. Now, as soon as there was any sort of contact or maybe about to be contact, the play kind of slowed down, but Gibbs certainly made it the furthest. He was certainly the most exciting player with the ball there. J-Mo had showed his speed, I would say, and trying to get to the outside, but you know, there was no tackling, so it's really hard to judge how far they would have gotten. So it was more or less at this practice on Thursday, I feel it was just us learning, you know, how they're going to kick it, and they were just trying different ways out. But Jahmyr Gibbs definitely stuck out to me. Jacob, did you think the same way?
Oh, definitely. Apart from everybody else, he, you know, when the ball is in his hands, he's able to make plays with it. You know, we talked about it briefly when we were there at practice, though. I'm not sure I feel comfortable keeping Gibbs back there returning kicks just because of the potential for injury and how important he is to the actual offense. I just don't think the chances of returning a kick for a touchdown, you know, anymore is going to be very, very low. And I feel like every time you put him out there, you're kind of putting him at risk.
Yeah, I heard Joe Buck and Troy Aikman talk about this a little bit, and they said it's not like a traditional kickoff, and it's not like a punt either. They said this is almost like a punt/run play based on how close the guys are to each other. So I'm not sure how that will affect the injury rate, but obviously there is that concern, you know, with it being a return person, whether it's a punt or a kickoff. But I think we're still trying to figure out who the prototypical type person is to be your returner, because you do want that speed like Jamison Williams has, but you also want that skill set that a guy like Jahmyr Gibbs brings to the table. And you mentioned going to the outside, you know, from what I saw just from like the two returns I saw in the Chicago-Houston game, they talked about going to the outside. I can't help but wonder if going right up the middle might be the thing, or what type of blocking schemes they come up with. Did you guys notice who was doing the blocking?
Go ahead, Jacob. I know you're keen.
I was paying very close attention to that, because they really shuffled so many different people in there. There were a lot of receivers, you know, a lot of your typical special teams, like your punt coverage and stuff like that. They were kind of moving almost everybody on the offense getting a turn out there. I think even Jamison Williams lining up blocking. do you put offensive linemen on there because they're not moving very far? How do you handle that, really? Just something else that they were kind of toying around with and playing with different ideas.
Yeah, I noticed, Terron Arnold was out there blocking at one point just because that stuck out to me. It's like Terion's out there. So I think that they're still figuring out who the prototypical, blocker is going to be, the prototypical setup. I also noticed that, you have two return teams. So whoever got the ball, there was the second return guy was generally running to the outside to block someone. So it feels like they're leaving someone on the outside unblocked, because that's probably the longest defender that's going to take to get to the ball. So that was interesting too. And I could see some trick plays having two returners back there where there's a handoff or a reverser and it's something like that. You could definitely anticipate something like that.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I have a feeling with the strategy with the blockers and whatnot is it's going to be a work in progress. Coach Angers and I on a previous episode when they announced this rule were like, even when preseason ends, it's only the beginning, really. What you see in week 1, 2, and 3 is going to look very different from 10, 11, and 12 when we get down there, because there's going to be an evolution through the season. People are going to try and find weaknesses or come up with that trick play maybe you talked about. It could be, back in the day, I remember, if not, I'm pretty sure it was Desmond Howard who took a lateral in the NFL, on a punt return and then took it the distance. And so stuff like that will be interesting to see what teams come up with. But that's awesome that you guys got the first look at it in Lions camp there. It's going to be interesting. And I think everyone wants to know who the blockers are going to be, and are they going to put Gibbs back there? Is it going to be a guy like David Montgomery? Does it have to be the breakaway speed, or does it have to be someone who can break a tackle? I mean, watching the Olympics, you saw how the U.S. won the rugby game, right? It was breaking a tackle, running a person over, and then nobody could catch her, and the U.S. won their first victory in rugby in 100 years for a medal. And right. So, I mean, a play like that right up the middle could be the play, and so you're looking, does a certain guy have the ability to have the speed and break the tackle, or do they just have to kind of, have the speed and avoid the tackle?
It feels like since all the blockers are going to be in that one area, that if you break that containment, I mean, there's going to be no one back there other than maybe the kicker that's back there. But it's a kicker. So, that's probably not a major obstacle for someone like Gibbs or JMO or whoever else is back there. So I think that is going to be an interesting play, because there's, on a regular defense, you get through the line, you still got to go through the secondary, you got to go through the linebackers, you got to go through the safety. Well, in this, it's like there's no safety back there. So it seems like if you get past that line, it may be a quick, quick touchdown after that.
All right. Well, that's going to be real interesting to see. I appreciate you guys giving the firsthand accounts of what you guys saw at practice with that. Let's move on to the next thing you guys mentioned, which I think you got to see some good one-on-one matchups between the wide receivers and the defensive backs. And I'm really interested to hear about this, because we know who we have in the starting receivers. We've heard some names of multiple guys competing for the backup roles, or even maybe a 3-4-5 spot. And then this defense has been getting some rave reviews as well. So what did you guys see on these one-on-one drills?
Yeah, so it was very cool. I mean, obviously, defensive backs, that's what we're looking at the talk of the town. We've got the rookies out there. The one-on-one drills was very cool to get to see in person. And, they kind of kept the same matchups through their rotation. We saw Terion go up against Amon-Ra. Really, Amon-Ra only beat him on an inside route. Other than that, Terion was pretty much on him the whole time. He was not giving him very much room. Ameek Robertson, Ennis Rakestraw, they both looked like physical press corners. Really, the cornerbacks did very good in that drill. Interesting point that Darius Fountain actually was lined up with the ones, and he was catching passes from Jared Goff, and he actually was doing very well out there. Brian Branch, we got to see a full practice out of him. He lined up like he was going to try to cover JMO. I don't know if it was the trainers or coaches. Somebody kind of pulled him out of that drill pretty quickly. But that was exciting for a second. We thought we were going to see a really good matchup there too. It just very cool to see in person. And I think it kind of went how you wanted to, where the same player wasn't winning every single time. It wasn't like Amon-Ra was just consistently beating Terion. They were going back and forth. Ennis Rakestraw back and forth. that's really what you want to see. You don't want the offense to just consistently blow out the defense. You don't want the defense to consistently stop the offense. Very back and forth, but that's, I mean, I think that was best case scenario for me anyway.
I agree. It was a treat watching them, watching all the different drills that they performed out there. It was, you know, you got talk about iron sharpening iron, you know, Tarion and Amon-Ra, you know, Amon-Ra is going to give Tarion all he got, but Tarion held his own. He wasn't getting blown out by Amon-Ra. And that's got to be great for Tarion's confidence to go in and be like, I can guard a guy like Amon-Ra. You know, he's a top five wide receiver in the game, in my opinion. And so it was intense and it was great.
Well, that's exciting because I know a lot of people are very optimistic about the Lions defense, especially the entire defense this year, but especially with the overhaul of the secondary. So that's exciting to see that going up against these known quantities that we have on the offense, that they're winning some battles and holding their own and not being blown out on it. Moving or staying with the offense, I guess, we know the first team offense is pretty much set. But the big question is, how's the depth look? And we've heard that there's a lot of really good depth. But tell me what you guys saw. You got to see the second and the third team offenses work, I think. Give me some of your observations for that.
There were some struggles on the second and third team offense I saw this time. And Hendon Hooker had looked like how I've been reading. He has his ups and downs. He had a really nice pass to Ziltra on a seam route, and it was a perfect pass. Probably the biggest gain of the day that we saw in the team drills. It was really impressive. It was a nice throw put right on Zylstra, and he just in stride, and he kept going. And it might have been a touchdown during the game had they been playing at full speed. It was hard to tell, but it was a huge gain. Love seeing that. And Ben Johnson, I listened to that press conference. The thing that struck out to me is that he said that they have been very aggressive with the install. I quoted this because I thought it was so interesting. Been very aggressive with the installs, and as a result, we've had a ton of mental errors. But I'm pleased with the diligence. We are working to correct them, and we are right where we need to be offensively. So it made me a little bit feel better about the mistakes that we saw, is that they're just putting a lot on their plate. It's early in training camp, and they're going to just work through those mistakes and get better. And, you know, we talked about, you know, it's the offense versus the defense. We were chatting with some fans that are around us, and we were like, they were making the comment, we don't know who to root for, because you're playing, you know, it's Lion versus Lion. And Jacob had alluded this before, you don't want the offense to blow out the defense, and you don't want the defense to be just stopping the offense. So I feel like we kind of saw what I really wanted to see, was that both teams were winning and winning some battles. So then you could feel better at the end of the day that, okay, you know, because if the offense is just killing the defense, then, you know, well, it's great for the offense. But what does that mean when our defense is playing someone that's not the Lions? You know, we know Lions is a top five offense. So, I mean, that's going to be a tough challenge for any defense. But yeah, I agree with Jacob. It was nice to see each team win a battle.
Yeah, when they got to the team drills, I mean, it was definitely apparent when Goff was out there versus when it was Sudfeld or Hooker. Obviously, they don't always have the same receivers. They don't have the same lineman blocking for them. It seemed like Hooker was kind of holding onto the ball too long. He made, you know, a couple decent throws. He also missed, you know, several throws. Even Sudfeld, he was moving the ball, and then he threw a pick. You know, Rakestraw came across the middle and came and took one from him, which was cool to see. But at the same time, it's like, he shouldn't have thrown that ball. You know, you go back and forth. Really inconsistent day from the second and third team.
All right, well, that makes a lot of sense. You know, with Hendon Hooker, I think we're going to probably see the most progress within about the next 2 weeks after he actually gets the joint practices with the Giants, and then we get to see him actually get some preseason stuff, and then after a preseason game, go back to having regular practice again and being able to apply a lot of that stuff. I am excited to see the defense, though, holding up, because, as you said, the Lions have a top five offense. We know how good the offense is. The bigger question marks are the defense. And so if the defense is winning some stuff, that gives you more optimism as the preseason continues and we get ready for the regular season. Guys, the most potentially explosive person this year who may have grown the most from last year, and we have a lot of candidates with a lot of potential growth factors, is Jameson Williams. And he's grown in many ways. I think one area where I noticed it the most which isn't even him, but it's how he's received, and that is the way the fans are treating him. You know, when he came out to the practice that I was at and he was warming up ahead of time, just the ovation he got, right? Everybody seems to be excited about Jameson Williams versus all the wishy-washy stuff there was last year. And I think a lot of people saw stuff in the second half of the season, and they're hoping he takes another step forward. And you know, he looked good when I was there, but that was without the pads and a little bit less contact. You guys got to see him with pads on. How did Jameson Williams look to you guys?
No, he looked really good. Looked like a different player. We also got to witness, as soon as he came out, you know, the fans erupted. You seen him run across the field. You know, he could sense that too. Like, he knows the team. He knows the fans. The city's got his back and everything. You can just feel the confidence and everything. He definitely seems more comfortable out there. Everything that he was doing. I mean, every time he touched the ball, they were cheering for him. He had one drill where it was one-on-one. He gets the ball, comes on the outside, and he actually ran over Rakestraw. The crowd went crazy. You know, he's not shying away from contact ever, but yeah, he's just, you know, it's still real early, but he just looks like he's on a different level. Definitely breakout candidate. Sky's the limit for sure.
Yeah, I think J-Mo's still J-Mo in that he gets excited, but it's just a more, I want to say, maybe more mature J-Mo, and he's channeling it the correct way. And you're right. The way that the crowd responds to him is so different than last year. It was so guarded last year. Like, oh, he's kind of come into this suspension, and some, you know, talk radio was really down on J-Mo. So it was just like, it fed into what the crowd's beliefs were there on the time. But the training camp crowd was just, on Thursday, was amazing towards JMO. And I know, Matt, when you went on Saturday, you had a similar experience. So it wasn't just one crowd. It's been multiple crowds, and we've been hearing it. One thing I will say, in that same press conference I mentioned earlier with Ben Johnson on Thursday morning, he even mentioned that they've, you know, grown JMO's route tree. So not only is he, you know, being able to perform, you know, with the route tree that he performed last year, he's growing to his repertoire, which is going to just make him even more dangerous. Because, you know, are you guarding over the middle? Are you guarding deep? If he can run multiple routes, you know, it's not just the go route. He could tear you up. Anyway, he had a nice comeback route that I saw that he, you know, the defenders, those cornerbacks got to play back because you got to respect that speed. And he just gunned it. And it was obviously a timing play that they had worked with Jared Goff, because J-Mo turns around and the ball's right there, and the defender's like 3 yards back because he's backpedaling. It was impressive.
That's awesome. Yeah, we saw little elements of all that stuff as the season went on, and the fact that it's expanding and they're going to be using more of it, and he's going to be involved that much more. And again, you're seeing the progress with the pads on in practice. Is exciting. You know, again, they have joint practices with the New York Giants, so they'll do a lot of work in that joint practice that they won't necessarily do in the preseason game, but those are going to be really exciting opportunities to see them going up against people who they aren't practicing against, who don't know a lot of their stuff. Guys, any other observations you had, anything else from Thursday that you want to share?
I just want to say that Dan Campbell was pretty fired up at some of the mistakes that were happening. Obviously, we're not hearing what exactly he's saying, but you could tell he was animated, and it felt like there were some false starts and there was just some unforced penalties that I will say, you know, in the regular season are very uncharacteristic of this team. It's a fairly disciplined team as far as like unforced errors are concerned. I think, you know, he was probably just reinforcing that this is not going to be acceptable for the season. Now, it's early in training camp. Am I worried about that these are going to prolong? No, but I could tell that Dan Campbell was very intentional about how he was talking to his players. You could just see his body language. Did you notice that, Jacob, or was I just the only one that saw?
Yeah. So that was right after they had a drill where it was just like a quick, I think they had put like 20 seconds on the clock. They gave the offense one play, no timeouts. And then after that play, they had to run the kicking team on there. And it just was very chaotic. It was not very smooth at all. There were linemen late getting off. They lined up late. You know, Bates ended up missing that field goal. And that's kind of when they all had a big huddle. And yeah, we could hear Campbell yelling from where we were. Can't tell what he's saying, but he was not happy. And you know, we just want to clear up those things now in practice so that it's not a problem in the, you know, in the game in the future, which I don't envision it being. Just got to hammer out those details now.
Jake Bates did only kick the one field goal, missed that. It was like, from what I remember, it was like a 40 yarder. So it was not very long. He missed it wide right. It actually went into the stands. The ball went into the stands right next to us.
Tonight, I'm excited to hear, but not surprised to hear about the fieriness out of Dan Campbell, because, you know, they talk about that, you know, Coach Angers, who's on, will often tell you, you got to work on those little things now, because little things become big things later. And, you know, Campbell said, we're not going to rest on our reputation. We're going to rest on our work ethic, right? And so that's what we'll live on, our work ethic. So that's good. And not a surprise, but also good to hear for a reinforcement there. Now, before I get you guys out of here, I want to take a little minute and let the listeners learn a little bit more about you when it comes to the Lions. First off, I want to start with, do you have a favorite Detroit Lions memory? Is there a favorite memory of yours surrounded by the Lions, whether it's at a game, it's a moment watching a game, or just a moment that you just remember? It can be recent or longer ago. Jason, why don't we get started with you?
Yeah, I don't have I have so many memories with the Lions. I'm going to just tell you about something that has affected me and how I treat my two sons. I have two sons, huge Lions fans now. When I was younger, my family, we weren't rich by any means. We were doing fine. We were able, things were fine, but it wasn't like we were going on many vacations and all that kind of stuff. So one season when we were in the Silverdome, they had a bleacher section, and those seats only went on sale the Monday before the following Sunday's game. And at that time it was pre-internet. My mom waited in line at a record store to get these tickets, and she did it a whole season. So we didn't have like traditional season tickets, but we did go to every game. And for us, it was really a treat. One time we got four rows off the field. It was amazing. And I still remember that to this day. So that was really my impetus for getting season tickets last year with my boys, hoping I could recreate that. And, you know, luckily the Lions had the season they did last year, and it turned out better than I expected with my boys, the memories that I created. So it was, something that the Lions created for me, my parents helped create for me, and I got to create it with my boys. So that's where my memories go.
That's a really awesome story, Jason. And I love how you're passing that same thing on to do it with the next generation. That's really cool and amazing dedication for your mom back then. Cause I do remember those days where you would stand in line and they would go on a computer screen and you couldn't see anything and they would just give you information. And Jacob, how about you?
Nothing as sentimental as Jason, but I guess the best memory that I have, the best game that I went to. So we actually went to the game, Cowboys versus Lions. This is at Ford Field. This is when Calvin Johnson had, the 300 yards receiving. And that's when Stafford kind of had that, fake kill the clock and then snuck into the end zone. Crazy environment to be in. The Ford Field exploded. That was just an awesome game to go to. I think that was the favorite one that I've been to.
That is a pretty phenomenal game. Yeah, that is awesome. One of my memories is my first game ever. My first game ever, and the ticket stub is behind me on the wall. It was 1989 or 1990, December 1990. Monday Night Football, Lions, Raiders. It was Barry Sanders and Bo Jackson. And we were in the upper corner of the end zone, like the top row of the Silverdome. Because, again, when we bought them, we went to a store called Hudson's, and they had a Ticketmaster thing, and I didn't know anything about seats, and you just took what they gave you pretty much. And we were walking up and up and up, and we're at the very top. And, it was a very competitive game. I think the Lions came out on the short end, but it was awesome seeing Barry and Bo. And so that was my first Lions game. And so, like you guys have said, multiple memories throughout the years, but there was that. So let me transition over to favorite player. All right. Now, as most people would say, I think the two and most recent memory that people tend to gravitate towards are Barry Sanders or Calvin Johnson. And if one of those is your favorite player, please do say so. Jacob, let's start with you this time.
We talked about this briefly on our other pod before, but really, when I started becoming a fan and the downside of the Lions, there weren't a whole lot of bright spots, but the one bright spot was definitely Calvin Johnson. And he was the one, you know, had his jersey and everything. You came to the, you know, despite whatever the Lions were going to do, you know, Calvin was going to put on a show. He was going to catch the ball. Didn't matter how many people were covering him. Just so many great memories of Calvin Johnson. Definitely my favorite player.
All right. Jason, how about you?
I mean, Barry Sanders is obviously my favorite player. Matt and I think, you know, kind of like really started getting our feet wet with the Lions right when Barry Sanders was hitting his greatness. So he is number one, but you want to be on Barry, right? Because that's just a given, right? I'm going with someone that was his teammate. It's Chris Spielman. His all-time favorite Lion. And it's, as Jacob alluded to, we kind of did this exercise on our pod when we were kind of introducing ourselves in our first episode. And what I said there still holds true. Chris Spielman was amazing on that team. I'd grown to respect him as a player, but what he did and his hand in bringing Dan Campbell here, he's had an impact on this team that probably a lot like a layperson that doesn't follow it as deeply as all three of us do, maybe not fully understand what he has done. He worked with Sheila. I firmly believe that he handpicked Dan Campbell and, you know, had a hand in bringing Brad Holmes. You know, as Chris Spielman was a commentator during, you know, between these times with the Lions, he talked with all these people. He's familiar with all these people. He always had a passion for the Lions. You could hear it in his broadcast when he was trying to be impartial. It was very apparent that he still loved the Lions. And I think that when he came back, he had a huge hand in bringing what we have right now, this success that we've had on, you know, and he just seems like a right-hand man for Dan Campbell. We'll just do whatever Dan Campbell needs to do. He's bringing draft picks in. You'll see him on those inside the dens. You know, he's riding in the car with the draft picks. So he's firmly entrenched in Lions. He will, you know, I loved him as a player, but he's only, his Lions lore has only grown with me. Just this continued efforts with the Lions.
Well, that's another thing we do have in common, as I share with you guys, a big Chris Spielman fan myself. I had his jersey in high school, still have it today. And it's no coincidence that the dice over my shoulder are the numbers 54. That's rather intentional right there. It's an exciting time. A lot of new Lions fans have a lot of new Lions players to look up to and root for who are going to be talked about for years to come, I'm sure. Jason, Jacob, thank you both so much for coming on, sharing your insights, talking a little bit of Detroit Lions.
Thanks for having us, Matt. It's it was a pleasure getting to know you as we prepare for these podcasts. You have a great great podcast. I love listening to your show, and thank you for having us on.
Definitely love talking Lions, especially somebody who seems like you know, they got interesting insights, they know what they're talking about. Even though you relate a little more to Jason, you guys are both around the same age, I guess, bringing up Chris Spielman stuff. It's been fun though.
Fair enough. Yeah, it's definitely been fun, and I thank you guys for coming on here, and hey, thank you for having me as a guest on your show. And again, folks, you can find their work on the podcast called Talkin' Grit, and again, as I mentioned earlier, it's on multiple listening platforms, so please check it out. Thanks again, guys.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Matt. Thank you, Matt.
So, Coach, there were some great insights by the guys from Talking Grit about camp. Let's revisit some of those things. And this first one's probably just going to drive us all bonkers, but we have to talk about the kicking saga because it seems to never end. And it's something we thought would have been figured out a long time ago, but we know Michael Badgley's been hurt. We know Jake Bates is the only guy that is in camp right now. Now, the interesting part is Riley Patterson and James Turner both got released this past week by their teams. Those guys were both with the Lions. You know, Badgley and Patterson had like 90 and 85% accuracy rates as far as how successful they were kicking field goals. And so what happens now is Patterson, they both went to waivers. Patterson got claimed by Washington. All right. Washington, I think, had gotten McManus before that. But Patterson's been claimed. Interesting enough, the Lions did not put a claim in on Patterson. And we're still not quite sure why Patterson was released, because he had been with Jacksonville before and had some success. James Turner is out there. Mm-hmm. Now, nobody has claimed him. He is a free agent. Jeremy Reisman was at practice on Friday, and here's the numbers. He said Bates struggled again. He went 8 of 15 on field goals and 5 out of 7 on extra points. Now, it's going to be interesting to see, because we know Bates has the distance. It's the accuracy part. Now, James Turner, if you're wondering how did he do in college, at Louisville, he was 90% success rate. And at University of Michigan, his last year there, he was his only year there, he was at 85%. Now, that's out of 22 and 21 attempts. I'm not sure what his longest one was, but I know he did hit from 50 yards at Michigan. And if you're wondering where Bates was with the Michigan Panthers, he was 17 out of 22. That puts him at 77%. So I would be surprised if in the next week the Lions don't bring somebody in. Maybe they'll ride with Bates all the way through. They're off over the weekend. They're heading out to New York. They have a preseason game. Maybe they want to see what they get out of him in that preseason game before they make any other adjustments. But what are your thoughts on this process?
Well, I think, you know, we're having some concerns with it for sure. I think he had a bad day today. But then again, on the kickoff stuff with the new kickoff rules, the special teams coordinator Flip was all fired up about he can place the ball anywhere he wants. And I guess he actually kicked the ball and hit one of the front line guys at the 34 yard line and it bounced back. So, you know, I think you're going to have to bring one in. I think only for the competition part as much. And you know, and to see if somebody can, you know, make sure, you know, we're close to 100%, especially on PATs. And then, you know, your field goal stuff, you know, we know that he can kick that long one. So, you know, I still think it's the training over the next couple of weeks. I think it's the mental toughness. I think he's probably tired. You know, he's never been through practices like he's going through right now. You know, the Michigan Panthers didn't do practices like that. And you know, I'm sure with that, and especially with the training stuff. And so I think he's, you know, I think it's going to be, we're going to find out a lot, but I think we got to bring another one in. We just need to bring another one in for that reason, for the two of those guys to have to compete and practice. Plus they can go off on their own and compete when everybody else is doing, you know, all the position work.
Those are some excellent points. I like the point of, you know what, he's never been through practices like this. So the team with the expectations as high as they are, we don't want this to be a glaring weakness. And so at the same time, you don't want to cut the cord too quickly on a player either. And so let's see how he can develop, how he can grow. And that's actually going to be a common theme you and I talk about a little bit in this episode, is growth of players. Players aren't stagnant. They don't stay right where they are. And oftentimes coaching can bring even more out of a player in one sitting versus another one. And so I'm hoping the Lions bring somebody else in sooner than later, have that competition, and we'll see where it goes. So let's move over to wide receivers, because this is an area where we have seen a lot of growth, a lot of potential maybe out of some wide receivers. Now, Isaiah Williams, the undrafted free agent out of Illinois, he's a person that I saw in camp and he did pretty well. Dorrice Fountain has been getting a lot of hits, if you will, from media in camp. Now, anyone not familiar with Dorrice Fountain, he was a fifth round pick 6 years ago out of Northern Iowa. He only has two catches in his entire NFL career. Coach Campbell was asked about what to expect out of some of these guys, and he said Fountain has a great opportunity in front of him, but he needs to do a little bit more. So he's not quite there yet, maybe, but we're hearing people rave about him a little bit. Coach, a guy that's been in the NFL 6 years, is there still a chance that he could elevate and you could see him at a different level than we have seen him with other clubs?
Dan Skipper. That's all I got to say. He spent 6 years on practice squads. Look what he's doing for us now. Yeah, I think Fountain, I mean, the good thing, his tenacity and his work ethics and struggling for 6 years to live his dream is a pat on his back. I think that's one of the biggest things you got to think about. He can high point the ball. He's big. They said that he's pretty freaking tough. So yeah, you're seeing a lot of positives to it. I was listening to Dan Campbell, I think it was this morning, you know, and they talked to him about Peoples Jones, and he said, Peoples Jones, I expect more out of him. And Fountain's taking this opportunity to do wonders with it. And I think that's a great thing. They were running a drill yesterday, or again, I read on it. I haven't been there to see it. They were doing the one-on-one drill, and Fountain and Vikai were a couple days ago because he's hurt. They were running both sides, wide receiver and DB on the one-on-one drill. So that tells you they're looking at Fountain as a special teams guy. And they got, again, a lot of these guys, that's where you make the club. And, you know, he may turn out to be that. The biggest thing with those guys is they're making plays and doing things that they need to do. They just got to keep, they got to be consistent with them. You know, it's not a splash play and everybody writes about it. It's what was the rep prior to that and what was the rep after that, you know. And I talked to the guys that are in the league now that are, you know, Trevor Nowoski and them, and it's, you know, keep stacking plays, you know, and that's what he's got to keep doing. So I'm, you know, looking forward to seeing how it works out, but got to love his tenacity. That's for sure.
That is for sure. And you're right. It's doing the same thing over and over and getting better, you know, taking those small steps up. And Fountain, again, Coach Campbell said he's not quite there yet. He needs to do more, but he could be knocking on that door. And sometimes it's just you get over that little bit of a hump and then you get to the next plateau, or you get over that plateau where you're at. And Fountain is the only other guy on the roster that I know of that has a similar size to Antoine Green and Donovan Peoples-Jones. The other thing, going back to Campbell's comments, you referenced them as well, they're expecting more out of Donovan Peoples-Jones, and they have not seen that yet. And Campbell even said, we need him to take one more step, because Coach is like, we need to fill the Josh Reynolds role. Now, he said, will that be one guy or will that be a committee? And it seems like we have a lot of great candidates, and I think over the next week, we're going to learn a lot more, because, you know, they had their Friday scrimmage, but next week, it is joint practices with the Giants, which we're going to talk about briefly, and that preseason game. But again, coaching, it can make a player better or it can leave a player stagnant, depending what type of influence they get. Nate Sudfeld is a guy who has managed to stay with the Lions, and he is finding his role, his niche, which is to help develop the others. And at times he does look great in practice, but there's another guy I want to talk about who also might be surprising people. A guy who was drafted by this regime, but you haven't heard a lot about, and it's running back Jermar Jefferson. Campbell, one thing he won't do, he will not praise somebody if praise isn't there. And he was hesitant to even say anything about this guy because he didn't want to jinx things. But he said, Jermar's in a really good place. And I think he said it at least two times, if not three times. Like, he had moved on to the next question, and then he brought up a really good place again. I don't know if that's going to be the special teams contribution, if that's running back and special teams. But, man, I mean, if Jermar Jefferson's showing something, that also is a bit of a surprise.
Oh, for sure. And it was three times, Matt. I counted them. I was like, and you could see in Campbell's face that I don't want to, you know, he said that I don't want to jinx it because then something happens, but you could see his shoulders got bigger and he kind of got a half grin on his face. And that tell, you know, that's read the room. Campbell's excited about him right now. And again, you know, that was good to hear. You know, again, that's another one of those guys that we don't hear about, you don't talk about because we had all these other guys doing things, but, to see him doing that. And, you know, we were at, you know, last year when you and I went and watched practice, he had a pretty good practice when we were down there. I think you and I had talked about it. I think he had a couple, you know, and then he may have gotten hurt or something like that. I don't remember exactly what happened. So yeah, that's a great point, Matt. And when Dan Campbell says something like that three times, I'm going to be pretty happy as a player, but I think I'm just going to work a little bit harder to stick to it.
Yeah. And Jermar Jefferson, for those of you who don't remember, he was a seventh round pick back in 2021 and out of Oregon State. So it's interesting, and I really want to see what Campbell's seeing, because again, we were out at one practice earlier this season, but we're not seeing it and we don't see everything. And these joint practices, I think you'll learn even more. And so I'm excited for that. Another thing coming out was the defense is looking pretty good. And that's super encouraging because we know we have a top five offense from last year and we expect them to be right around the same area, but the defense is the area that we're looking for improvement on. Enos Rakestraw had another interception. I think he's had three interceptions this week. And so that is exciting and encouraging for one of our rookies.
Oh, I said, you know what? And him and Arnold, I mean, they went at St. Brown and J-Mo. You know, J-Mo ran him over, and the next play he tossed him to the ground. You know, what everybody's saying is these rookies they're not fearful. They're not scared. They don't care. They know they're making their teammates better. and they know that they want to get on the field. So yeah, this kid is, he's making some plays. And I think, you know, those are stack plays. You know, that's not, I had a pick this week. Well, he's had three this week. And again, they're not shying away from going against St. Brown. You know, they're not shying away from JMO. I mean, Arnold's not going anyways, because I'm sure JMO picked on him when they were at Alabama together, and he wants to pay him back, because like JMO said, he's a grown man now. So yeah, it's positive. I'm sure you listened to OC's comments about them, and he said the back end is just, man, they challenge us. They challenge our receivers, and it's great, and it's only going to make us better. He even said we got to come up with some different schemes, because right now they know them. So that's good stuff. So I going to what you're saying with the joint practice coming up, that's going to be huge. For the younger guys, and of course for the guys that are, you know, that aren't working for a starting position, but are already locked in a starting spot.
Yeah, it's super exciting that this is coming from Rakestraw, right? He's not expected to be the one or the two, right? That's Davis and Arnold. And so if Rakestraw is showing this ability and this potential right away, it really excites you for what this defensive secondary can look like. And we're expecting a lot of variety of packages and people playing a lot of different positions. You took us right to the next thing. The Lions are off over the weekend. They travel to New York. They've got the joint practices with the Giants. Now, we got to see it last year, and that's pretty awesome. Talk about the benefit to a joint practice. You've run joint practices back in the day before a scrimmage with another team. What's the benefit that you get from this, and what do you think the Lions are going to be looking for?
Well, the big thing from the player standpoint is they're not going against their same guys that are in the locker room day in and day out. You know, it's, you're getting an opportunity to go against somebody else, somebody that's starting or somebody that's trying to make a team, you know, from another team in the NFL. So those are huge. You can work on some of your schemes. You know, the offense is always going to struggle in your normal team practices, because the defense knows your calls. I mean, I think they even said that about Anzalone was making the offensive calls, you know. So, you know, that's the big thing. The competition part, you know, you're going to, you know, there's going to be some, you know, concerns and problems like that. You're worried about guys, you know, getting banged up, but it gives you that opportunity to go against somebody that you don't know his every movement. You don't know when he moves his hand to the left, he's pulling, or you don't know when he looks his shoulder to the right, or you don't know that his initial bull rush is, he's going to come at you, he's going to punch you with the right arm, and he's going to swim underneath with the left arm and things like that. So, I think that's the biggest benefits from it. And, it gives you an opportunity. Plus, it's going to give an opportunity. You're breaking camp to get into a preseason game, even though today was, and you're in different, you're not waking up in the same room all the time. You're not eating the same food all the time. You're not going through the lines with everybody all the time. I mean, there's just so many benefits with these joint practices, long as everybody on both sides stay healthy.
That's awesome. And the nice thing about the joint practice, I mean, they're almost more valuable than a preseason game, because you can dial in specific situations and say, hey, will you give me this coverage? Because I want to try something against that coverage. And that's what we got to see last year. And unfortunately, the Lions only get one of those, and it's on the road this year. But that'll be super valuable. This may be the most valuable week coming up for the Detroit Lions players as they get ready for the preseason, the regular season, because they get those joint practices, and then that leads directly into a preseason game. And you're going to see, I would think, this is the week where you're going to start to see certain guys separate or show where they're at in contrast to some others. And so I'm excited to see the reports that come out of New Jersey, and really looking forward to that Thursday game. As far as the Thursday game goes, I know we're not going to see a number of people. You know, I don't expect to see Goff out there. Probably not going to see St. Brown out there. There's going to be a number of guys we won't see, but I'm excited to see all the guys we are going to see, because we're such a deep roster, and we want to see how these different guys are doing. And see, again, this is another opportunity for guys to elevate their game in a situation like this, and really want to see what Jake Bates can do in an NFL contest preseason game against the Giants. Safety and being healthy is the number one thing we want coming out of this. Coach, anything you're looking for, any thoughts on the joint practice more or on the preseason game coming up?
Well, I think you made a good point. And going back to the joint practice, you know, it is such a big part, because the one-on-ones are you know, a great measuring tool. And it's knock on wood. It's also a little bit safer than the team concept, because, you know, you got bodies falling, got bodies thrown, people doing. And so I think one of the things off of that is, I know they had a bad practice this week because it's a mental toughness concept. And I think that's what you're doing when you go into these joint practices, is your mental toughness when you're going through, oh my God, it's 90 degrees out. Oh my God, it's, you know, we're not getting water breaks. Oh my God, these practices are long. Oh my God, we got film room. And it gives you that thing to where you've moved on to another place. You moved on to another place. So your mental health and your focus level should pick up. You know, it's definitely going to pick up. Knock on wood, that's going to keep people safe, you know, because then you're not taking a down, you know, a down off, which nobody in the NFL should be taking a down off, because they're trying to stay there. So, and then again, I like the game concept, the kicking part from that, our backups from that. The young guys are going to probably play a ton of corner. You know, our corner guys, you know, the defensive line. I'm really looking forward to seeing Levi. I just continue to read things on Levi, and I'm, you know, he might be my next favorite now. You know, Kamish is stepping down, and Levi's fought through injuries and stuff. So, but we'll see how that goes. And yeah, and again, as you know, and I know, getting to see them on TV and helps these podcasts out, that's for sure.
That it does. It's going to be an exciting time. And yeah, Levi is a great candidate right there for a guy to root for. If anyone's looking for an underdog, look at him, because of all the things he's battled through and the reports coming out of how well he looks. And we'll get a really good feel with the reports coming out from the joint practices. And then after this preseason game, the Lions have that Friday and Saturday off. And then they're back at it on Sunday, the 11th. And I'm looking forward to see what they're saying on the 11th and 12th, because those practices, I mean, this next week is such an opportunity for these players to grow, especially the young ones, that you might see a whole different level come the 11th and 12th. And that's what we're hoping to see.
I want to get a shout out to Teddy Bridgewater. Reading the stuff that J-Mo talked about, what he did to prepare himself for football, to prepare himself to be the receiver that we, knock on wood, we think he's turning into right now. Again, we haven't seen that, you know, live. But I think that's just a huge shout out to Teddy. And that shows you what J-Mo is all about. He did everything he can to get himself in the position that he's in right now. And that's to be the number two wide receiver and to make just huge plays for the Detroit Lions. So little shout out to Teddy. And you, nothing like talking to a guy with experience and meeting with guys like that to see what you have to do to make it in this league.
Well, that's true, because – everybody can use a mentor, and then that's a great thing. It doesn't even have to be the same position, obviously, but he worked with enough players. He'd been around the game enough. From meeting Jameson Williams, he's a nice kid, and he's a kid. I mean, especially when you look at my age compared to his, but he's young, and he loves football, and he's good at it. And you know what? Having a mentor help you navigate a lot of different things in life is a great thing, and help fine-tune things, because it's also great you're not just having a receivers coach help you. You have someone from the quarterback perspective who was able to dedicate time to him last year when Goff couldn't focus as much in that area, because they're trying to focus on certain other elements because they had high expectations going in. And the fact that Teddy took that extra time is huge. He's coaching high school football down in Florida. We wish him and his team well. But he's still paying dividends with the Lions. That 1 year is much more valuable than a lot of people realize that he spent with Detroit. Coach, before we get out of here, let me ask you, any final thoughts, any last things you want to share, talk about?
No, just looking forward to all of this coming together. Those little pieces keep getting placed in there. And, of course, we have to pull a couple out with injuries and stuff like that. But they continue to piece it together. And it's looking forward to see what they come up with.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining today, Coach.
All right, Matt. Thank you. Have a great day and enjoy this beautiful weather.
You as well. And another shout out and thank you to the guys from Talkin' Grit. You can find their podcast on most streaming platforms. And thank you so much, folks, for tuning in. You can find more episodes and content at notthesameoldlions.com. If you're listening on YouTube, please hit that like button while you're at it. Tell your friends about the show. Please subscribe regardless of your listening platform. Until next time, stay gritty, my friends.
Professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, so focus is important. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, focus and quickly get through your work with relevant, real-time suggestions. And it works across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can sound more confident and persuasive wherever you write. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.